This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. We're going to be talking this morning about kids' mental health and back-to-school issues. Joining me are two members of the Hopewell Health Solutions team. They operate in Glastonbury and West Hartford. I visited their offices in person in Glastonbury to record this episode, get to meet the team and see what they're all about. We have Dr. Christine Schlichting. She's the director and founder of the group, and also their IOP, Intensive Outpatient Director, Bart Wachowski. Bart, I'd like to welcome you to the show and just start off with this particular question. When I say back to school, what comes to your mind?
School refusal, absolutely. We see a lot of kids who get nervous, they get anxious, they are thinking about the experience that they had last year, and they're afraid that they're going to relive it. So it becomes the stomach aches, the I don't want to do this, I'm getting more nervous, starting withdrawal, things like that. But we also see kids who are excited. They are about to start something anew, and it's going to be a new chapter in their life. And you start seeing them get a little more bouncing off the walls, getting ready to go to school. So we see both sides over here.
Dr. Schlichting, question for you, talking about back-to-school refusal. When does it begin? Is it a month before classes, a week before classes? Is it the nerves, the concerns about bullying? What is it?
It depends on the kid. So a kid that has, first of all, a kid going to kindergarten or moving to middle school or going to high school for the first time, that those are all big transitions. So a kid who's having a very big transition, it's expected that they're going to be much more nervous and anxious than a child who's maybe going into their junior year of high school or fifth grade year in an elementary school. Also, it depends on a kid's personality. There's some kids who miss school, and then there's some kids who really don't look forward to school, and school is difficult for them and always has been. So I think it's normal for different kids to have different reactions about back to school, and it's not a good or a bad reaction if your child is nervous going back to school. It's just an indication that that parents should pay attention and really needs to plan for that child going back to school.
If we're talking about parents paying attention to their child's needs, their concerns, their worries, Bart, what should they be on the lookout for?
Could be a child that's a little more quiet. Normally they're open and discussing, and now they're starting to be less open and discussing. They're spending a lot more time in their room. They don't want to go out as much. They want to withdraw more into electronics of some kind. There could also be the child that is open and saying, I'm nervous about this. I do have a little bit of fear, but they're not going into full details. They're just giving minimal information. Those are the things that parents really need to kind of dig a little bit deeper.
Is there a routine that would help the kids in getting more accustomed to returning to school? Dr. Schlichting?
So one thing parents and just people should recognize is that it takes about 6 weeks to build or break a habit. So if school vacation is 9 to 10 weeks long, all of the habits that had been previously built up around school really need to be rebuilt. So the habits of waking up in the morning, having your clothes ready, having your book bag ready, doing homework at night, going to bed early, making sure that you have enough time to take showers and when showers are going to happen, and food and lunches and all those kinds of good things. So it's really sometimes good to put out a visual schedule, maybe even on a whiteboard, starting at least a month ahead of time. So starting, you know, very beginning of August, even end of July, and talking about, it's very typical. I have two teenagers myself, so the kids will stay up way into the wee hours in the summertime. That's very, very normal. And they don't always wake up very early. So bringing back even half an hour, you know, every single, or an hour every single week to wake up, go to bed earlier and then wake up earlier. So if your child has been going to bed at 12, then we would put it back to 11, and then 10, and then 9, and maybe even 8. So throughout the weeks, and every week trying to get back to that normal bedtime that should be happening, and then the normal waking time, and trying to and really setting goals together as a family doing it, so that everybody is doing it, not just the child, because then they'll end up feeling punished.
I'm Morgan Cunningham. It's Face Connecticut, and you're joining our conversation now with Hopewell Health Solutions, talking about back to school refusal and some kids' mental health issues as they prepare to go back to classes for the 2024 to 2025 school year. My guests, I have two of them, Dr. Christine Schlichting and also Bart Wachowski, both of Hopewell Health Solutions, Glastonbury and West Hartford. Bart, we know that as you get older, there are more problems, more issues that you face, particularly teens with school, concerning teens with school, bullying, social media, you know, the regular teen drama, right? Are those some of the common factors driving some of their teenage concerns, or are there other problems that we should be aware of too?
They're a little bit older. There's the peer pressure that comes in. There's the social media. It's not like before, when I'm a child of the 80s and 90s, and there was no cell phones. When any kind of bullying occurred, it stopped at school, and that was it. We're living in a day and age now where bullying is a 24/7 thing. And kids are getting nervous about it. They know that I go to school, somebody can take a picture of something, and then it's gonna be all over everything. Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, whatever the new things are out there. So kids become apprehensive. If I go to school, what if I do something? And now it's gonna be all over the internet. So that'll start to get a little more of that anxious. But that really spans across everything. It couldn't just be kids who are older. You're also gonna see that with the younger generation. We're starting to notice that a lot of the younger kids are experiencing that as well. The older kids, though, you also see with high school, what am I gonna do with my life? What is the next choice for me? What are my career options? Am I gonna go to college? Are my grades good enough? If I've missed so much school, will I even be able to graduate? And then the pressure from the parents, you have to graduate, you know, what's gonna be the next step for you? So these kids, they're getting pressures from everywhere, and sometimes they don't know exactly how to navigate through all this, and it becomes difficult. So if they don't have any kind of proper foundation on how to navigate the stress, they're gonna withdraw. They're not gonna wanna go to school. School becomes now the enemy, and they don't want anything to do with it.
Barn, if you could take one of those examples, even another, and go in depth into how you at Hopewell Health Solutions would tackle that problem for a teen, I'd love to hear it.
Social media, that's the very first thing that we talk about. Kids have access to things that it's incredible because they have access to so much information, but it's also a detriment to them. Because they have access to so much information, it's unfiltered. They don't understand. So that's one of the first things that we discuss over here, is limitation of how much social media, what they're looking at, We have a very young population over here, so we do discuss a little bit about algorithms, but not in the sense that we say, hey, if you watch this, all these things are going to happen. We go into a little bit more of maybe let's look at some positive things that you can look at on the internet as opposed to the negativity. We have kids here who are about 9 years old, and their major concern is there going to be World War III? And so we have to kind of scale that back and walk that back. What is it that you're looking at? And bring the parents to the conversation. What are you allowing the child to see? Is there any kind of filters on there? So it's a complete wraparound. We bring everybody in. It's a huge discussion. But a lot of the things that we're trying to do now is detox from the internet. Limit how much they're seeing while they're in IOP with us.
IOP, of course, referring to intensive outpatient programming that they have at Hopewell Health Solutions, which is geared at helping teenagers facing numerous different issues and challenges. We talked about that in our previous episode with Hopewell Health Solutions on Face Connecticut, and you can find that podcast available at Audacy, AUDACY, on that app and platform. Dr. Schlichting, anything else that you'd like to add on to what Bart was talking about?
So I think there's like a great example that Bart can talk about in our IOP program, which is for tweens, so kids that are 8 to 12, and then also we have a separate program for teens that's for kids that are 13 to 17. We do a lot of wraparound services, and we work together on a team, a clinical and medical team, to help these kids. And one thing that we did recently that maybe Bart can talk about is we worked with a parent who was really struggling and seeing a lot of issues with gaming and her son, and her son having a lot of mood disturbances and difficulty getting off the gaming devices, and really it's really addiction. Mm-hmm. Really what we're talking about is addiction in young children. And Bart, along with the clinical team, came up with a digital detox plan with the parent to really help bring the child off of these devices in a conscious way that wouldn't cause a lot of harm and disturbance. And it's been quite successful. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that.
So how this all started was we had the parent come to us, and she was very, very nervous about her son. How is these, why is it that he's always on these video games for hours on end? A lot of parents, and she even admitted it, that sometimes this is all he has in order to, you know, deal with the day because there's no structure during the summer. So what we ended up discussing is let's do a digital detox, but we're going to scale this back a little bit. First thing we did was we brought the child in and we said, okay, we have a question for you. If no electronics existed anymore and everything just shut down, how would you spend your day? And they started naming some stuff. They wanted to do some puzzles. They wanted to read some books, mostly comic books, things along those lines. Legos. We're like, okay, so if you could pick any of those, what would you like to do? Started naming a few. We went out to Amazon. And we said, okay, start picking some that we can send over to mom so mom has a list of these things. And we started saying, okay, day one, instead of 3 hours, we're going to bring this down to 2.5 hours. And we started scaling it back all the way up with the game plan of being next Friday, no more internet, no more video games, nothing. And what we're going to do is we're going to replace that time whenever this child has that urge to get on some kind of electronic. Instantly, we're going to go right to one of the things that he picked, either a game, Lego, whatever the case may be. That's going to be the avenue that he's going to take. So really, it's taking a child who will automatically.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Go towards one thing and changing the direction by giving them something else to replace it, something that's positive and something that's healthy. And that's kind of how we're working with this. And we keep on doing daily check-ins with mom. How's it progressing? Have we had any pitfalls? Are we going in a good direction? We've already said there may be a slip up here and there. There may be a couple extra minutes or maybe a half hour, whatever the case may be, but that's okay. This is a process. We trust the process and we see how things go.
Dr. Schlichting, question for you. Talking about all of these different strategies to help these youth, is it unique to one individual? One approach works for person A and another approach works for person B. Are there things that are more holistic that works for both person A and B? Could you talk about methods?
Yeah, so this is a younger child. This is in the tweens age. So that same technique would not work for somebody who's a teenager. But we tailor each plan and each sort of intervention that we create for the kid dependent on their age and what their, you know, what their interests are and how to help them. That's just one of the things that we do is in terms of helping parents do a digital detox, whether that's gaming or social media.
I'm Morgan Cunningham. It is Face Connecticut, and we are talking with Hopewell Health Solutions. They're in Glastonbury in West Hartford. Dr. Christine Schlichting and also Bart Wachowski are my guests today on Face Connecticut. I want to ask Dr. K about broad school threats, because once school starts, I can assume that my newscasts will have many reports of schools closed due to threats that are broad involving one or several schools. This is not necessarily new that people have called in threats involving schools, but the way that it's being done is different now, that you have these threats being made on social media. They spread more quickly. They can be made anywhere by anybody. Could you talk about how that impacts the students?
Well, I think we live in an age of violence, and kids are very aware of what's happening, and that we live in a very violent society. We can't completely shield our kids from the violence and the threats and assaults. However, we can shut down the devices. And I think that is what's really important, that we don't have the TV on all the time, that we do have downtime as a family that is device free, that we go to the beach or go out in nature with our loved ones and really detach and don't always be looking at our devices or listening to something, that we really click in with what's important. And even within our IOP, our IOP is device free, and we help kids learn how to talk to each other and with each other and have really deep and meaningful conversations in person and really connect as humans. And that is the thing that is going to make us nourish us and make us feel okay so that we can handle this sort of age of violence that we're living in.
Dr. Schlichting, I'd like to bring you back to July 13th of this year, when a shooter attempted to assassinate former President Donald Trump at a political rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. The shooter, age 20, would have recently been in school. I stress the motive at this time is unclear and remains under investigation. But there may have been warning signs about this person's actions, about their intentions, about how they were doing. What are your thoughts on somebody showing warning signs that could lead to something more threatening?
People know. And that's the thing that disturbs me the most is his parents were looking for him, this 20-year-old, and the parents knew something was up. People know. There are people in the community, there are relatives, there are school psychologists, there are teachers who know that there are certain kids and there are certain individuals who are not well and really need services. And we fail to to identify these people early on for multiple reasons, I believe. And we need to be better at being able to screen for these sociopathic tendencies and also treatment for these individuals. They don't all of a sudden turn out to be sociopathic. It doesn't work like that. Sociopaths show themselves early on, and we know about them early on. However, the way we're handling it as a society, truly we are failing. And I worked as a school psychologist for many, many years, and there are absolute signs of people and kids that we see early on, violence to animals, you know, lack of remorse, being completely withdrawn, you know, having very strange ideas about things, and not afraid of death, dying, killing, and really obsessed with all of those things. Bart is also a retired police officer. Ask him the same question, because he may have a different answer than what I have.
Okay, Bart, what are your thoughts?
In situations like that, you look for somebody who's not acting as a norm. Somebody where you have a large crowd of individuals who everyone's excited, and this person's just standing there very stoic. There's no emotion, there's no nothing. Things like that are things that we would normally look for in a law enforcement, you know, capacity. As far as the mental health side of it goes, that's actually what I did for the past 3 years before I retired. Was I was a police officer, but I ran a mental health unit. And that's kind of what we looked for. Our biggest thing is that we would always talk to individuals who showed these signs. And we would actually get information from parents, from schools, from friends, from relatives. But they always wanted to remain anonymous. Mm-hmm. Don't tell them that it was me who did this. Okay, but if you don't say anything, then we don't know anything. And then we can intervene. And our action was not to be enforcement. It was to derail what the individual was thinking, get them off track, and get them into a hospital, get them into some kind of treatment, so that this way we could get it early. And now we had a very good success rate. We actually had a 100% success rate. Anybody that we came into contact with, we got them associated with some kind of services. We would also do follow-ups, have them talk to somebody. We weren't therapists on the job. We were still police officers, but we went into every situation of, hey, how can we help you? What do you need in this situation? Yes, we're all law enforcement, but we went in no uniform. We were very casual. And we would just speak about, hey, what's going on right now? What do you need? So this way, that person who may have felt like nobody in this world cared about them actually had somebody come into their house, had somebody talk to them on the phone. What do you need? How can I help you? So they had that connection that we would build with people. And eventually you would start to see it grow and develop into something else where it would be a lot more positive. But we did come across some very scary individuals who, had we not, you know, I don't know where that might have gone, but we got very lucky.
You mentioned anonymous reporting, mm-hmm. and you see and hear that all the time from someone that hits a car at a red light, a hit and run crash, or, you know, fatality, mm-hmm. to, you know, if you see something, say something. Mm-hmm. Are people afraid to still report anonymously?
Yes, absolutely. Everybody feels that if they call, they're going to be the ones that somebody else is going to call them back. That their name or their information will be plastered all over there. Even if it is anonymous, everyone is nervous about tracking, things along those lines. If you call a law enforcement agency or a tip line or anything like that, it is completely anonymous. Nobody is going to call you back. No one's going to give any of your information out. It really is something that we need in order to do our jobs better. We need that information. But it also helps if we have direct knowing of what's going on. If somebody calls and says, hey, I know so-and-so is speaking about whatever, planning something, making a threat. Okay, but we also need that piece in order to get us connected. So it's not just law enforcement showing up somewhere. Talking to family, talking to friends, talking to peers of some kind really helps us bring that entire service in. Now it's people who are concerned about you. It's people who actually care about you. That's why we're here. But as far as the anonymous complaints, we see a decrease in that. Nobody wants to get involved anymore. Nobody feels like it's my responsibility. Somebody else will do it. And that's something that I tried to preach a lot when I was still on the job, was, hey, we need the community's input on this. Please reach out. This will only help us do our job better.
Bart, final question. We are running out of time, and I really appreciate you and Dr. K from Hopewell Health Solutions, Glastonbury and West Hartford, coming on to talk about back-to-school issues and concerns. If somebody is concerned about somebody as we begin the 2024 to 2025 school year, we often hear, not just with school, but everywhere else, see something, say something. So what do you say and to whom?
You're the one pretty much responsible for this. If you don't say anything, you have a hand in it. 211-988. 211 is a mobile crisis for Connecticut. 988 is the National Suicide Helpline. Those are the perfect numbers you can reach out to. There's also many, many different hospitals that you can reach out to in an emergency case. They have clinicians on staff. You can reach out to them. But again, law enforcement, 911, there's also non-emergency numbers where that person may be living that they can contact, do a report, at least pass on the information so that follow-up can be done.
I'm Morgan Cunningham. This has been Face Connecticut, a conversation with Hopewell Health Solutions. Dr. Christine Schlichting and Bart Wojcicki, thank you both for coming on the show and talking about numerous back-to-school issues as they pertain to the Connecticut school year that is about to begin. And also, it was a great opportunity to visit Hopewell Health Solutions in person to do this recording. We'll have to do it again, all right? Bye-bye.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.